WildTalkRadio.com.
The following program is not intended for children. It contains mild language, violence, sexual innuendo, wink, wink, brief nudity, and deals with mature themes that some may find offensive. Parental discretion is advised.
The Wild Talk Radio Network now presents The Evolution in Online Sports Entertainment.
Hey, everybody, this is X-Pac with D-Generation X.
Hey, this is the Rated R Superstar, a.k.a. Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge.
This is everyone's favorite wrestler and mine, Rob Van Dam. You're listening to me because you are listening to Wrestle Talk Radio.
Wrestle Talk Radio.
Who's ready for story time, baby?
Hosted by Tim Stein.
Best there is, the best there was, or the best there ever will be.
The intern, Kane Kittens.
I am the best in the world at everything I do.
Special guest host this week, local indie wrestler Keishi Matsunaga.
I'm better than you, and you know it.
And the producer, Sir Rockin.
Acknowledge me.
Live on the Wild Talk Radio Network.
Don't stop listening, or I will find you. I know where you live. I have Google Earth.
WTR Sunday night.
And remember, it's okay to play with yourself. As long as you have an action figure.
I'm just another thing to know for using tall drinks and short fuse and getting in my own way. I'm just a bloodstained, folded hands throwing back the milligrams. I can't find the brakes. I'm hiding from the sun. Shotgun, God knows I'ma crash and burn.
It's Sunday night, and do you know where the host is? It's WTR, Sunday night, Wrestle Talk Radio, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network, wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTR live chat. If you have that Amazon Prime link to your Twitch account, it's called Prime Gaming. You can support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen, or if you've subscribed the regular way, you can get Apple TV for free for 3 months. You got like 2 weeks, but that's a thing now happening anyway. You can also use credit card Rocket Socket at the Fortnite shop when you buy your brand new battle passes in about 2 weeks and all the collabs that are going on at the moment. I am the producer, joined as always by the intern.
My stuff works. Hi, yes. Someone else is still working out their kinks, but I'm here.
Are we sure they're working out their kinks? I don't know. We do
look,
have.
It takes a lot to crank up the computer, so just get, you know.
We're waiting.
It's an old style. It's a Commodore.
That dial-up modem.
Oh God.
Someone must be on the other line. We also have one Keishi Matsunaga.
Are we sure that his summer just didn't get slammed too hard?
Hey. Hey, saw what you did there.
But we're here to talk SummerSlam, and hopefully Tim will venture on in, because he is online and he is in chat, but he's not in the call, so we'll see what happens. He should be here very, very soon. But yes, last night was the biggest party of the summer. Lots of twists, lots of turns, and some championship change hands, and you know, one big return on the show. I'll ask you, Case, overall impressions of SummerSlam.
I enjoyed it. I actually watched it while semi-hosting a barbecue, so that was fun. There were some opinions flying around on things. It was very people interactive, and there were people who had never watched wrestling before. That was neat.
I mean, that's good, I guess.
Yeah, it was a really good time.
That's good. Brian, what were your overall impressions of the show?
I thought it was good. Were there some things that, you know, we talked about last week, and when it got carried out, were, you know, kind of predictable or kind of what we expected, sure, but there's nothing wrong with stuff that you expect to happen. If it's a good story, that's how it's supposed to go. It's not supposed to be, you know, a change for change's sake. It's a lot of the stuff that happened on this show happened for a reason, and it either kept stuff going, or it ended things in a right way, or it elevated people who needed to be elevated. So, overall, I enjoyed the whole ride that was SummerSlam.
They weren't trying to swerve you with another swerve.
No, swerve's like, in the other company.
Yeah. That's his house.
I saw that coming.
Yeah. We had 3 hours of a pre-show. We had an opening concert. I mean,
it's kind of interesting that they kicked it off with the concert, got it right out of the way.
I mean, it's easy for setup.
It's easy for setup, and also when someone has a spot later on, it kind of helps to free them up a bit, too.
Yeah, it did help them a little bit in that one. But the opening contest of the night was Rhea Ripley challenging Liv Morgan for the Women's World title. Thoughts?
I thought they did a good job. It started off, you know, Liv playing possum, and there's like a little bit of a chase there, and then eventually it turned around where she started working that shoulder that Rhea had theoretically injured, whether that was the actual injury or the one that they talked about on TV. So that was good. They told that story well. They kind of went back and forth, and I thought the end was not... I think the end was done well, and not in a way that was like too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't sort of take away from what they were doing in the ring, and it ended the story the way it needed to end.
Yeah. I thought everything in that match was done the right way. So
Brent, what did you think about the match?
I thought it was good. The psychology was good of having, you know, Rhea having the focus on Rhea's shoulder. And they set it up in the pre-show of Jackie Redmond talking about, you know, oh, I interviewed Rhea Ripley and she was talking about her shoulder and she said, this is the strongest I've ever been. And, you know, Liv's going to have to contend with this. And that carried forward into the match of like, yeah, it's going to work. It's going to be the focus of it. And, you know, Liv worked the shoulder. And I liked the bit of frustration. I think it was about 3/4 of the way through the match where Rhea's arm has been worked over. She's trying to use it and it's just not working. So Liv is thinking she's going to capitalize, and just Rhea goes over to the corner and smacks it into the turnbuckle to put it back into place. Well, in quotations, put it back into place. And all of a sudden you saw the look on Liv's face change of like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Like, well, she's figured out plan B. Luckily Liv had a plan D in line.
I don't know if that was like the way that they made it look in the end. I don't know if she expected that or not. She looked about as surprised as everybody else.
But it would make sense of like, if you have a dislocated shoulder, I mean, you can either go to the referee and be like, hold, and try to pull it into place, or you do the Lethal Weapon, you know, Mel Gibson, and you just put your shoulder into a wall and just bang it until it's back into place, and it's like, well, here we go. But it did well. Dom did a really good job of like playing to expectations until the moment that he needed to. And I thought they did really well in explaining and in him like why he took the chair from Rhea at that one moment. Because it was like, no, you can't win the title like this. You have to beat her regularly. And yeah, you see Rhea like that realization hit of just like, shit, you're right. When he's playing the long game with all of this. And it was just, it's one of those when you see it and you watch it play out, you're kind of like, oh, that's interesting that they actually play. Because normally it would just be like, grab the chair and then you'd get like the smirk or, you know, like, haha, I screwed you. But it's like, no, it played out even more than that. And then you got the moment later.
You did get the moment later where Dom slid the chair into the ring, allowing Liv to capitalize, get the win. And then Dom lifted up Liv off the ground, gave her a kiss to him, and the crowd hated every second of it.
The crowd was revolted.
Like coming a week away.
I mean, yeah, we did. We talked about it last Sunday.
Yeah. Overall,
yeah,
it was an absolutely hot match to start the pay-per-view, or I'm sorry, the PLE, with. It was fantastic. It was very well planned out and booked out. And yeah, Rhea banging her shoulder back in the joint had me laughing, because the very first place I went was Lethal Weapon 2. As soon as I saw that, and I'm like, oh, God. And I'm thinking throughout most of the match that doing, oh, I'm wrestling with a dislocated shoulder was a little much. But towards the end of the match, I wasn't as bothered by it as I was when they initially did it. But shit, it was good. And yeah.
Well, and the shoulder injury made it more believable that, because no offense, Liv is a very capable person. Next to Rhea, you look and you're just like, Rhea would like eat her for lunch. Mm-mm. But if Rhea's got a banged up shoulder and she can't fully utilize her power, now it gives someone who's quicker a bit more of a puncher's chance. So
yeah, and Rhea was attempting to eat her for lunch in the first like 5 minutes of that match,
as she should have.
And she almost did, but the whole thing was very entertaining. And I tweeted it out or X'd it out, whatever you want to call it and phrase it, during the PLE last night. Rhea's babyface turn is complete.
Yeah, it was pretty much a given. She was already the babyface. Now she just doesn't have the group behind her.
Like, the crowd wanted to be legit behind her as opposed to being gorilla behind her. And now they will have that chance, and there's going to be an interesting dynamic, especially with what happened in another match. We'll talk about that later, and tie up that loose end. But overall, damn good match. And even though I do believe I said Liv was going to retain, I'm still kind of surprised that she did.
I think it was the right move, keeping the belt on her. Rhea doesn't need the belt right now.
She doesn't.
And Rhea with the belt would confuse the storyline that's happening elsewhere in the show.
Yes.
Which would be the main storyline where this basically is leading into.
Let's talk about it now, Damian and Gunther for the World Heavyweight title.
Okay, let's talk about it now. This match was essentially everything I expected.
I didn't expect Gunther to be the one to bleed out of the chest.
Okay,
go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, okay, that was a bit of a surprise, but at the same time, not so much.
Hey, Casey, how would you describe this match?
I would describe it as two big, meaty men smacking meat.
From the get-go.
Yeah. But, like, I mean, and it was cool because, like, the way that they were, like, you could tell they were standing there as the introductions were going, and it's like, ring the bell, ring the bell, ring the bell, ring the bell.
Well, and this has been playing up for the past, what, 2 weeks? I mean, We've seen a little bit more on Raw, but it really kicked up the past couple of days when, like, Gunther invaded Damian's talk, and Damian called him out. And it was one of those things where, yeah, Gunther went on the offensive, and Damian stood up to him and basically, like, dressed him down to the point where, yeah, you wanted to see, like, even before the bell rang, that these guys wanted to just get hands on one another. And it made the crowd even more like, okay, ring the bell. Let's get this going.
Yeah. Yeah. They hit each other hard.
They did.
Damian looked like he was working a little bit stiffer than he needed to. Not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I don't know if needed to is the right phrase. More than he usually does, stiffer than he usually does.
I feel like that is the better term. Like, I think he kind of like raised himself to a level of like physicality that, like, he raised himself to Gunther's level of physicality.
The only thing that I can think of is Gunther told him, yeah, go for it.
Oh, of course he did.
Like, before, like, when they were laying it out, you know, pulled back the curtain a little bit, Tim. But I can imagine Gunther saying, you know, like, don't hold back. Give it to me. Make it look good. Mm-hmm. Because he did.
Yeah, no, and they just beat the crap out of each other and made it look great.
Oh yeah, like hats off to both of them for getting as well as they were giving.
Well, I think for someone like Gunther, he needed someone bigger to be able to kind of slap meat against, because you've had him, you know, taking on Ilya and Sammy and people that he's been able to kind of manhandle a bit, what was he going to do when he had someone that was his size? And it's like, oh, okay, yeah, it's like the power game is still going to be there, but what happens when a guy can chop back or punch back as good? And so it was fun to kind of see that. And then that moment where he was kind of Gunthering up and he slapped his hand on his chest and just kind of like rubbed it into his face and hair. It was just like, oh, okay, he's taking this next level.
He sure did.
Although I do have to say, I feel really bad for Ginny. She just wanted to celebrate with her man and he kind of was like, nope, I gotta go. Gave her a quick kiss, but like any kind of hug, any kind of other stuff was just like, nope, can't do that on TV, gotta leave.
But then there's Finn Balor and his whole involvement in the match.
The entire thing finally comes to a head. And I'm looking forward to watching events unfold tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be fun. After what happened. Yeah. So Finn helped put Gunther's foot on the rope at one point.
This was the smartest thing ever.
Evil smirk on his face, and then once Damien saw it on the replay on the big jumbotron in the stadium, he went from 0 to 100 and went to kill mode.
Lindsay talked about this last night. We as wrestling fans are conditioned to have both the referees and the wrestlers to be complete idiots. You know, when Logan Paul may have brass knuckles in his hand and the referee is like, hey, what do you have there? And then, you know, he turns his back and a second set comes out, all that kind of stuff. And we're all conditioned for, you know, chicanery to happen and just be like, well, they're never going to see. Last night, it actually happened where a wrestler looked up at one of the jumbotrons and went, wait a minute. What the hell just happened?
It helps when they're in a big giant stadium that shows it.
Oh yeah, they've got like 14 jumbotrons all around the stadium, but I just love that moment of like the announcers are talking about, oh, Finn put his foot on the rope, and then the camera cuts back and you just see Damien staring up at the one and the referee's next to him doing the same thing, and Damien just turns around and is like, I'm gonna kill a bitch. And Finn's just smirking the whole time, and like, my time has kind of come, until Damien was able to get his hands on him for a very, very brief moment, and then I think Finn's life flashed before his eyes for a second. But it was just a really good moment of like, yeah, no, this isn't the Vince era where, I mean, everyone would have just played stupid. Finn would have been sitting there smiling, and Damien would have no clue what happened. In this, it was that look up, oh shit, okay, well, I'm gonna try and kill you now. And Gunther having to try and be like, well, Let me take care of this first, and then you guys can do what you need to.
Yeah, but it was done in a way that, like, it let Priest kind of take his eye off the ball, so that, you know, you can still look at it as, even though he lost, and even though he lost to Gunther, like, his head kind of got taken out of the game for just enough time, and you can't let a guy like Gunther have an opening like that. Otherwise, he's going to take full advantage. So, this way, even though he lost, he's still... It doesn't take a lot away from him because he got screwed.
And it angles him right into that very next program that you want to see, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that he's going to be sitting there lurking for Gunther. Don't get me wrong, the belt's important to him, but his first priority is going to be, I want to kill him. You know, he's breaking up the family, I'm going to hurt him, and then I'm going to go get what's mine.
Well, he might stop and hurt the other one, too, and then go get what's his.
Oh, he may hurt a couple of people.
Yeah.
Rhea's going to hurt a couple people, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Carlito or you're JD McDonagh, I would just try and find wherever, like, not where Raw is tomorrow, but, like, 2 weeks from now, and just start heading there now. Because you're just going to be collateral damage.
Carlito, I think they should just, like, tomorrow, just have him be in there and be like, hey, this has been fun, but things aren't even so cool anymore. I'm going to go.
I can either see that, or I could see him kind of just walk into the clubhouse and be like, hey guys, did I miss something?
Yeah.
And you just have like Damien and Finn like at each other's throats. You have Dom like hiding from Rhea. JD is, I guess, you know, trying to help with Damien, because he'll probably be, you know, the meat shield for Damien or for Finn for a little bit.
Yep.
And yeah, you just have Carlito sitting there like playing WWE 2K24.
So yeah, all that said, Gunther's your new World Heavyweight Champion.
I mean, I can think of worse people with the belt. he's gonna carry it well.
He could. We had two other title changes in the men's division. First, Bron Breakker won the Intercontinental Champion by defeating Sami Zayn.
A lot less one-sided than I thought it was going to be.
Well, it was, again, it was that thing of Braun's picking up on little things. So it's like, what didn't work in the first match, he started to kind of learn a little bit this time.
Mm-hmm.
Change some things up. I mean, Sammy's going to be a veteran, and he's going to be out there. And I think one thing that I appreciated from the post-show with this is they brought Braun on, and he wasn't just your stereotypical cocky kind of like, I knew I was going to win, haha. He was talking about, you know, oh yeah, he went to go visit his dad and uncle up in the Legends suite, and, you know, it meant a lot to him, and this is his first, like, singles title on the main roster. This is amazing. And then, you know, he gave credit to Sammy. He was just like, I knew it was going to be a battle. He's a hell of a champion. It was just my time. And it's like, okay, it's not overly cocky, but it's just acknowledging, like, Sammy's really good. He defended it well, but I was just better in this moment.
Very much so. I think Tim's trying to talk. I don't hear anything from Tim.
No. Braun showed his ability to adapt in this match, basically backing up what Brent said, learning from what happened in the previous match and remembering. And he had some good counters. And I just, I'm still having a hard time getting over how fast he can get in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Really. It's scary almost how quick he can get moved. But kudos to Sammy for putting Bron Breakker over the way he did last night. It was a very more entertaining of a match than I had expected, which kind of sort of harkens back to what you said, Casey. You didn't expect Sammy to put up such as much of a fight.
No, but I'm kind of glad that they did it the way they did. I'm glad that they didn't crush him.
Yeah, it wasn't a squash, and Sammy put up some great offense and looked really good.
Mm-hmm.
And losing to Braun didn't hurt him one bit. Nope. And the match felt like a passing of the torch to me.
It needed to. If you're going to elevate new talent, stuff like that has to happen.
Oh, yeah. And basically, my point being is they did it right without hurting Sammy at all.
No, Sammy's fine.
Yeah.
Sammy's basically bulletproof at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. Well, he has been for the last year and change.
Well, and he also plays that ultimate underdog role so well. So even if he is put in situations, it's like, well, yeah, he's supposed to kind of be gutsy and all of that. Mm-hmm. So he gets to go back into that role and, you know, help other talent and put together good stories, because that's what he's just able to do.
So, do we see Sammy versus Gunther in Vancouver?
No.
I think you get the match, but I don't know if it's that Survivor Series.
Oh, it might eventually happen, but I just... I'm hoping it doesn't, because it would feel too much like a retread from their IC match.
Maybe, but you could, it's also one you could pull off, say, at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, where you need down the road a little bit. Like, Gunther have a few different opponents.
Yeah, so you got a few months. Get him to the Royal Rumble. If Gunther's your guy for Mania, you do Gunther and Sammy, because I don't think Sammy will be challenging for the world title or the WWE title at WrestleMania, but he would be a legitimate challenger to make a believable world title match at a Royal Rumble.
You
can play off the history. Yeah. Knowing them, guess what? In 3 weeks, he'll be at Passion Birth Inn.
Mm-hmm.
The other men decided to change hands on this night. L.A. Knight. Yeah. U.S. champion.
They did something really cool in this match that I don't know if people recognize, but all the people that bashed Kevin Dunn got the exact opposite with what happened here.
Oh, the table spot.
Well, not just the table spot, there was the one part where I want to say for at least a minute, it was a solid tracking shot. No cuts, no nothing. It was one cameraman following the action, like, and getting between ropes to get action and everything. And it was really cool because it was one of those like, oh, I'm waiting for this shot to go like to this other side. And then I noted, I was like, wait, no, they're doing just a full track. Interesting.
Yeah. Because, oh, I thought you meant the shot where they showed Logan Paul not hitting the table at all, and you needed the camera cuts on that one.
Oh, well, yeah, there was that. And then there was also a social media clip that was put out today that I really liked that was Logan Paul in training bouncing off the ropes and doing the plancha over the top rope.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as he starts to he's just in his training gear with a, you know, set up ring. And he goes, and right as he goes up and over the rope, it seamlessly transitions to him at SummerSlam in his full gear, hitting the move on LA Knight. And nice. it was like, oh, that's really cool how they did that. And showing, you know, yeah, it's what he trains for. But yeah, starting the match with a just, you know, pre-bell, you know, cluster was, I think, what you needed here, considering LA Knight stole the Prime Mobile. And then put a rod through the window.
Yeah.
But in that moment, you would expect, like, someone would want to be like, yeah, no, fuck the bell. We're going to go and just start hitting each other.
Yeah, they said to me, LA Knight, yeah, I'm tired of your bullshit. Let's do this.
Well, it was also Logan, you know, trying to get the one-up on the vehicle, and he's the one that instigated it. He took the first shot, and then LA Knight wanted his pound of flesh out of Logan Paul.
Yeah, pretty much.
But, oh, God, that superplex spot.
Oh, that was, for right up until the last, like, half second, scary.
I don't know if it was the fact that Logan just didn't get over enough, because usually with the superplex, you know, you propel yourself over to take that flat back bump, but it looked like he just either didn't get the elevation, or they tried to sell it as a brainbuster at first, but whatever it was like, yeah, like you said, up until that last moment, you were going, oh God, oh no, no, no. Okay, he didn't land as bad as I thought.
It kind of looked like there was just a bit of a timing issue or something. I don't know, because like his legs I don't think his legs got over at all. And I think a lot of it was like right at the end, LA Knight kind of giving him just a little bit of an extra shove so he didn't land on his head. But it was very weird that like he really didn't go like up and over like a typical suplex. His legs didn't get up at all, so I'd be interested to see if anything comes out about that.
We'll talk a little bit more about Logan's leg here in a minute.
We got two legs to talk about tonight.
But this was the anointing that LA Knight needed.
Yep.
And I do like in the post game they talked about, I think Hunter brought up like all of the different names that LA Knight has used, because they had said it from this to this to this to Eli Drake to Max Dupree to LA Knight. Or actually, that may have been Big E that brought it up on his.
It was Big E at the Big Five.
Big Five, which is also a fun segment, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it was recognizing that, yeah, there is this long-standing lineage of LA Knight in wrestling, including his time in TNA, including Max Dupree. And it's like, this is the culmination of a lot of years for him, and he's finally won, you know, a singles title on a big stage with the big company. And he even said in, you know, in his postgame stuff of like, you know, yeah, this is my time, and, you know, watch out because it's just starting.
Indeed. It's a brand new U.S. champion. There was also a brand new women's champion.
Well, there's a new champion for the U.S., but we'll see how long that may be without controversy.
You want to mention it really quick? Talk about it?
So, I was watching this, and Tim also brought this up. When Logan took the blunt force trauma, he hit the ground. LA Knight went for the pin, and I noticed, like, wait a minute. His left leg looks like it's under the rope. Slightly. Now, they didn't bring it up on commentary, but it's one of those kinds of things where if you do want to prolong this a little bit, or if you want to give LA Knight a bit of a run and then you want to bring back Logan Paul to try and go for it again, he has possibly a legitimate claim of like, hey, that pinfall shouldn't have counted. My foot was under the rope. They didn't catch it. I have, you know, look at this angle right here. It shows foot, rope, there. Will they go that way? Who knows? But it from looks, it could be something that you could have as a legitimate gripe if they want to advance it.
You and Tim had that point last night.
Apparently almost at the same time, Brent.
Look, we're longstanding wrestling fans, okay? We're conditioned to see some of these things.
Well, yeah, you're a wrestling fan. I've booked shows.
Well, true there.
Casey's been on a bunch of them, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm still a fan.
I'm not saying I'm not. I'm just one-upping Brent, that's all.
I'm side-upping Brent.
All right.
I'm one-upping you.
I'm just being me, so there.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. So now we'll move on to the women's championship match. Nia Jax, your brand new women's champion.
Oh, that one caught me off guard. Didn't think they were going to do that.
I don't know. I figured they had been kind of giving her enough momentum that I could see it coming.
I thought
they played it really well.
Mm-hmm.
With the interference / pseudo cash in from Tiffany Stratton.
I expected a cash in last night.
I did.
I wouldn't have been surprised if it happened, but I'm also okay that it didn't. And I also like that, like, Nia Jax really, really, really made sure that Bayley was not going to kick out.
Yeah, the finish was really good. It was decisive at the end.
Yeah. And like it makes Nia look like she was there and she meant business. It also, you can also swing it on the other way. It'd be like, it took three of these in a row to make sure Bayley stayed down, which keeps Bayley in a position that is still favorable. And you know, you kind of got Tiffany in there a little bit too, and you get a little bit more exposure to the soon to be, probably in the WWE shop, up the new briefcase.
It is. It's available now. Pre-order. It'll be
not available till December.
Yeah, not out till December. They're making them as they get them. so yeah, which I point out last night means she might be holding it for a bit since they're not releasing them until later in the year.
Well, and I think that is a smart move because what it does is it gives you a chance to really build up Tiffany Stratton as a babyface, which I think is going to be the ultimate role here. We've seen Nia as a face. It just hasn't worked.
Yeah. Well, but it's also nice to like have one of the Money in the Bank holders profile that briefcase for the extended amount of time, just to remind people that it's there.
It doesn't need to be, you know, 10 months, 11 months, you know, that kind of like, are they going to cash in? But you're playing the whole thing of Nia and Tiffany are BFFs. They talked about the fact of like, oh yeah, Nia picked me because of, you know, when we went to Australia, I was brand new on a trip and she took me under her wing. And what you can do is you can draw this out of like, oh yeah, they're BFFs. But what if Nia is kind of not mean girl, but it's almost like, you know, Tiffy's not, you know, Tiffy would never cash in, or kind of being, you know, the scary friend of like, you know, pushing her up against the wall and intimidating kind of stuff, where eventually Tiffy will crack or break out and be like, no, it's my time now, which would get her more of that kind of face rub that you may want to get for her, as opposed to, I think if she were to cash in last night, sure, cool moment, but it's also like, but what do you do with her after?
Yeah. So yeah, Nia Jax on top of the women's division on SmackDown. Then there's CM Punk versus Drew McIntyre with Seth Rollins as your special referee.
Oh, Seth, you special, special little man.
This match, Seth did some really nice callbacks to Shawn Michaels' special reffing.
Yeah.
There was that. I loved... At one point, it was just like Drew and Punk are beating the hell out of each other, throwing each other into the steps, and he's just standing there like, yeah, guys, go ahead, do it. I don't care. Beat the shit out of each other. I'm here to watch. And then when he needed to interject to like get his count in or tell them like, hey, okay, now you need to get back in the ring. But this is where like a referee leniency, you know, referee discretion would come into effect, because it's like the referee just didn't give a shit about these two people. He's like, yeah, I hate you both. Beat the crap out of each other.
Yeah. I thought they all played their parts well.
Well, this match definitely told the story that they needed it to tell. They wanted it to tell. They were hoping it would tell. And at the post-show presser, if I remember correctly, I did have it on, but I was listening to Rock and Lindsay last night afterwards. If I remember correctly, Drew was saying that he's done with Punk. It's over now.
Oh yeah, Drew's done what he's needed to. He beat Punk. He proved that he was better. And
it's not over.
He admitted that Punk brought the fight, but he was saying, you know, I have the Claymore. I have other stuff. I just have what it takes to beat him. And yeah, it's over. I'm off to go have drinks with Wade. Peace out. Talk to y'all later.
Yeah, it's not over.
Well, and it was a really quick thing, but they also did a quick cut, like picture in picture of CM Punk post match, you know, like backstage looking beaten and kind of like that he thought it wasn't over. Not in direct relation to Drew, but it was just one of those kind of moments where like the camera just happened to catch him like leaning up against the sound crates, and you could just tell like this isn't done for him, but Drew thinks it is. So now the next step is, how does Punk draw Drew in for the next match?
And does Seth Rollins have anything to do with the next match?
Well, I mean, you could tell they were planting the seeds of it leading more towards a Seth Punk, which, I mean, most people knew was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. So Triple threat in Vancouver.
Maybe.
Why do you keep saying Vancouver? That's way too far away, Tim. You got many people. You say Vancouver, like that's anytime
Survivor
soon.
Series.
Yeah, you got PLs before then. You got Bad Blood coming. You got Bash in Berlin. You got way before you got a Crown Jewel in between. You got four stops before you get there.
Yeah, I know.
He just wants to push the Canadian PLE.
I just wonder. Well, okay, that may be the tiniest little bit of it. You know, like Vancouver needs a card. Okay, but I would like to see them start stretching storylines a little bit longer again.
I mean
they're doing it right, like they used to do it back in the olden days, where they would have one storyline carry for 10 months before you get your payoff, and people were invested back then.
I mean, technically, Drew and Punk right now is sitting at 8 months.
I was going to say we're at 8-9 months if you count Survivor Series. Yeah. We're about 9 months into it already. And
yeah,
Rollins.
But they threw Seth in it.
Well, Rollins was in it at the start, too, because he was the first one to actively yell.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, if you go back to Survivor Series, and remember, his was the most animated reaction out of everyone when Punk was there. And that was one of the first things people talked about was, oh, Seth and Punk are damn.
Yeah. You see, This is exactly what I was just talking about. I hadn't realized that it was going on as long as it has been, because it hasn't felt like it. And I still want more.
Part of that had to do with Punk getting hurt and disappearing for about 8 weeks.
There's that.
But it's also they kind of kept them from touching a lot as well.
Yeah.
But Punk has been there. He's been on TV. He's appeared at PLEs.
Here's a question. Have we ever had a three-way Hell in a Cell?
Whoa.
No.
We've had a six-man. I don't think we've ever had a fatal, you know, a triple threat.
An actual triple threat in Hell in a Cell? I don't believe we have.
That'd be cool. I don't see them doing it, but that would be cool.
Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting.
Honestly, it could be a way to help protect Punk a little bit.
You do the match, but he also doesn't have to, you know, risk everything. Everyone can kind of play it a little safe and a little bit more.
He doesn't have to be fully invested. He can hit his spots. He can do some sells. But it's like if you sometimes may need a bigger spot, Seth or Drew can be the one to kind of help carry that.
Yeah. The only Hell in a Cell that ever happened in history where an opponent wasn't protected was Taker Foley.
Well, that's also because the cell decided it was going to be a participant in the match and
at one
beat
point,
Foley.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you build the thing out of zip ties, what do you expect?
Well, part of it was zip ties, and I think it was actually just the metal links that just were like, you've got 500 plus pounds sitting up there on a part that's not supposed to carry 500 pounds. So it was like, well, I'm going on vacation. See ya.
And then There's the main event.
Oh, wait, there was a triple threat Hell in a Cell. Alberto Del Rio, John Cena, and CM Punk.
Mm, okay.
So, intern doing the research.
Hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Okay. And then your main event, Solo challenges Cody.
Bloodline rules.
Bloodline rules for the Undisputed WWE Championship.
Cody's sitting there on his own after Solo's in the ring waiting for him on the bus. It's time. He gets down, grabs the leash, walks his dog, and encounters Arn Anderson.
Returning Arn Anderson.
I was looking away from the TV for a second. He's walking. That doesn't matter. I'm going to go do this and then watch. And then I look over and I'm, oh, Arn! Arn's back! And the crowd drowned out the first half of whatever it was he was saying. And they quieted down just in time to give us a major hint of who's going to wind up helping Cody tonight.
Oh, yeah. They hinted at all. Two major hints, yep. His friends, and then they did a point.
Yep.
Very subtle, too.
You know he's coming.
Mm-hmm. His friends you know about, and then there's, you know, you the point up in the air, like, yeah, the one.
Enemies that respect the hell out of you.
What did you think of the match first?
It was, for me, for the most part, what I expected, except I expected the third-party interference to happen a little bit sooner. I'm not disappointed that it didn't, but when it finally happened, it felt a little bit rushed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nothing that we weren't expecting to happen. And somebody on social media said, okay, time for the main event, and it's going to be gloriously overbooked. And they weren't being snarky when they posted it. They were looking forward to the overbooking. I read that, and I'm like, yeah, okay. I go with that.
I mean, I don't know about gloriously.
That was what they said on X.
Yeah, but I mean, it was a typical Bloodline rules booking. Is that a way to put it? Like, it was the amount of interference that I expected.
It wasn't too much. It was just kind of enough.
Yeah.
And for one, it may have been the last interference for a bit.
Yeah.
That was somewhat unfortunate. Yeah.
Before that moment, looked like a beast like he always does so far in his run.
Mm-hmm. The problem was he didn't quite jump far enough, and the side of his shin banging on the vertical part of the announce table.
Jacob fought the table. The table won.
Yeah. Well, he wound up in a walking boot last night.
Yeah.
After all is said and done. So that's, while it's not, I don't want to say it's good news. It's not good news, but it's good news. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Because it could have been a hell of a lot worse than it wound up being. But holy fuck, was he pissed off that he hurt himself.
Well, yeah, you got to think that's not just a twisted ankle. I told Rock, when I first saw it, I thought he fractured his, you know, his shin. So his...
Oh, I guarantee it. He cracked bone. It's cracked at the very least.
I thought that's what it was. And it's like, you saw him attempt to get up, and when he couldn't, that's when he really kind of lost his shit. Because he knew it was supposed to be like, okay, get to the next spot, and it didn't happen. So that's when you just see him, like, yelling at Solo, essentially, like, change the plan, go, just do it. And the thing was, is, like, I don't know what was supposed to happen next, but kudos to Solo for at least doing a good job covering to where it is that moment of like, we don't know what was supposed to happen next.
He was supposed to sell an injury, but not that.
He was supposed to sell a fake injury, not have a real one.
Yeah, he was supposed to sell the leg injury, but not have one. So
not that well.
Not that well. He went too realistic on the end.
But it was smart because you keep him away from who came next, and it should be that. You shouldn't have those two really kind of interact yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, did the crowd explode the second the music hit and the graphic came on the Tron. I expected the crowd to go nuts, but even expecting them to go nuts, it was still a holy wow moment.
It was. And they did the, but whose side is he on?
Is he coming down to take out Cody? Or is he going for the tribal chief?
I mean, I feel
think
like
the shirt
kind of
telegraphed it.
Yeah, I was just about to say the shirt kind of gave it away.
When you have OTC on there, which stands for Original Tribal Chief, I think we kind of know where you're headed there, boy.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm thinking that's supposed to be Original Tribal Chief, but it could also mean Only Tribal Chief.
Either way, it points to one direction.
A whole lot of t-shirt sales.
And a giant-ass spear to Solo Sikoa.
Superman punch and spear, yeah.
With the hoo-ah in between.
But I also like the fact of, it's like, you didn't get that kind of uber babyface moment of, like, him helping Cody up. You didn't, all it was like, Roman came in, did his business, and then just got out of the ring and was just kind of like, I mean, you can do what you want. And Cody was more eyeing him than anything.
He gave Cody a nod right at the end.
It was just kind of like, all right. But yeah, Cody, like, the whole time was keeping his eye on Roman through the pin, through the celebration. It was not taking his eye off of Roman Reigns because he just didn't want to. Right. You didn't want to give him an opening.
And you know that these two are headed for a showdown, but not until after Roman takes care of business. And I was disappointed not to see Heyman last night, but at the same time, I'm glad that he wasn't with Roman. If he had walked out with Roman, that split second of uncertainty never could have happened.
See, I think you don't have Heyman there because he serves as the recruiter. Roman is the presence. Paul's doing the dirty work behind the scenes, getting people where they need to be.
Yeah, Paul is selling recuperation. Talk about dedication. The SmackDown where he went through the table. For added realism, he refused to get any sleep the night before. Mm-hmm. Wow. I've heard of method acting, Casey.
I mean, it's one way to, you know, if you want to be a character who's frazzled and is unsure of basically his entire life at that point, that's one way to do it.
It was very effective.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I mean, I didn't expect Paul to come out tonight. I think it'll be much better if he rolls out later when it comes time for the explanation, whereas this way I think it was better because you can have Roman kind of roll out, run in, hit his spots, and then take off. And then you don't have to worry about Heyman kind of like following in tow.
And at some point in the very near future, we're going to probably have to talk about who winds up on Team Roman and who's Team Solo.
Well, also right now you don't need Heyman because when it's Roman and Heyman just by themselves against a four-member bloodline, from a tactical standpoint, Heyman becomes a liability.
Yeah.
Yeah, as long as he can stay behind the scenes and stuff like that, and, you know, air quotes, be kept out of harm's way. But you yourself said it. He's a recruiter. Roman's going to need backup.
Right. Well, and I was going to say, it's one of those things where if you're Roman Reigns, let's say he comes out on SmackDown next week, and Solo's there in the ring, and it's, you know, Roman comes out, it's one-on-one. The other three guys are still out there, and they could get Paul. So if Roman is a tactician, which during the Bloodline, you know, story arc, he's kind of been more like a thinking man than in the past of, you know, just run out, punch, spear, done.
Yeah.
He would recognize if Paul, you know, if I'm out here, there's no one there, and Paul can be used against me. So, yeah, you go get yourself a Jimmy Uso, possibly, because, you know, Jimmy got cut out by Solo.
Yeah, Roman. I wasn't going to bring it up tonight. I was going to wait until our next webcast, the next time we talked about who's going to line himself with Roman, but you brought it up. Does Jimmy come back to the fold? Or Jay come back to the fold with his brother Jimmy?
I don't think that's going to happen right away.
I don't think it's going to be coming back to the fold. I think it's going to be something along the lines of like a Sammy and Kevin, where the situation will present itself where it's like, okay, we're going to have to come together as part of this larger threat. Now,
the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Kind of. And it's like, look, Oos, I'll have your back here because I know their trouble. We're, you know, family, but like I don't expect from this it becomes, you know, oh yeah, the Usos are back together. Jay has spent, I think, too much time trying to establish himself as a kind of new main eventer single star that I think, aside from a one-off for possibly a... I mean, Rock, you can say the words if you want to.
What words?
You know, that the event that takes place with Survivor Series. The oh. The
War ring. Games.
There we go. Mm-hmm. I think... Jay can go out and be like, look, we come together, we do this, and then it's, I mean, he can have his brothers back, but I don't think it will be, the Usos are back together, y'all, day one-ish. No.
No.
It's sticking up for family and not reuniting.
Right. It's when someone picks on, you know, your brother in the schoolyard. You come out and you help, but it doesn't mean that, you know, you go everywhere together with them from now on. But it's just, you know, if shit goes down, we come rolling up and we take care of business.
In case she was going to make a bit of a point before it got cut off about timelines.
No, I just, yeah. I mean, Brent kind of hit all the points that I was going to allude to, is that it's not going to happen right away. I feel like it'll be one of those things where... Roman's crew, whomever he may choose, will be trying, and I think Solo's crew will kind of have a bit of an advantage for a bit, and then whenever it comes to like the apex of this story, it'll be Jay comes out, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, it's on. So whether it's right before War Games or sooner or later, I think that's how they'll play it. They'll kind of he'll be doing his own thing on Raw, and then finally you might have Paul go over there and try to appeal to him, and then it might just get to a point where he's like, yep, no, I have to help, because, I mean, like, when Roman was bad, it was bad, but this is worse.
He's the lesser of two evils for the sake of the greater good.
Yeah, well, but then, you know, it'll be like, hey, we appreciate the help, but, and I mean, I'm sure you'll get that resolution of, like, Roman acknowledging him and being like, appreciate the help, but you know, you've got your own thing now, go back to Raw, and it'll kind of be like that, like, acknowledgement handshake and being like, where everybody kind of goes their separate ways and does their own thing,
and they're cool with each other.
Yeah,
well, and this can also play back into something that Jimmy said a while ago, which was why he turned on Jay in the first place, because Jimmy had said essentially like, I didn't do this to spite you. I did this to save you, because what being tribal chief does to someone. And now you've got those three that can look at Solo and just be like, exhibit A. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to have to take them out before things get too crazy.
Yeah, but we'll save that more for another time. Brent, a little bit of housekeeping.
All right, housekeeping for our pick'em results. In case you did not hear last night, we had 13 competitors in our pick'em contest.
Ooh.
In 13th place, going 2-5, we had Blaine, a new person, joining our picks.
Well, slow up. Blaine is new, but not new. And by the way, hi, Blaine. Blaine is actually Sheila's son, and so he would play pick'em, but with his mother.
Oh, gotcha. Well, there you go. He ventured out onto his own, and this wasn't a great card for him. But you got to start somewhere. In 10th place, going 3-4, so just under 500, we had Sheila, Sub, and the video game. In 8th place, going 4-3, so just over 500, we had Rock and an inanimate object, the Wheel of Fun. Rock, you're as good at picking as the wheel.
Don't you say anything. keep going, because I know where this goes.
I know. Don't worry. I know exactly where it goes, too. Tied for 5th place was myself, the godfather of extreme, Rob Parks, from CB Radio Saturday night, except for last night, and Tommy C., one of our listeners. We all went 5-2. That means in 1st place, we have, in no particular order...
Are you sure about that?
We have the Racks, Lindsay Ward, going 6-1.
Good job, Lindsay.
We have 1, Keishi Matsunaga going 6-1.
Yay me.
Good job, Keishi.
We have Tim Stein going 6-1.
Well done, Tim.
Thank you, sir.
You all tied with the 8-Ball, who went 6-1.
Which is like the second time in history the 8-Ball actually did any good.
The only one the 8-Ball got wrong was Bailey.
That's the only one I got wrong.
I don't remember.
As he figures that out, we'll
I'll start. Go back and listen to the archive.
Keishi, you got Damian Priest wrong.
Ah.
You thought he wasn't going to lose quite yet.
There you go. But that'll do it for WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio. Tomorrow night, it's the Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. The Rack is live Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. Friday night, it's GM Battles, 10 p.m. Eastern. Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern, it's WTR Game Night, featuring something. I don't know, maybe Fortnite, probably. Maybe. We'll see. Followed by Stevie Radio live at 11:30 p.m. Eastern. We'll be back next Sunday for another edition of WTR Sunlight Wrestle Talk Radio at 10 p.m. Eastern. It's at Wild Talk Radio, Facebook.com/Wild Talk Radio Network, and it's at WTR Sunlight on Facebook and Twitter. Tim is on the social medias where he talks stuff.
Yeah, a whole bunch of different things. Follow me on X at Flames Forms. It's summertime, so I talk about summertime stuff and stuff like that. So just follow me at Flames Forms.
Keish?
I am on all the socials at Kyle Driver. If you can't find me on the socials at Kyle Driver, I'm not on those socials. There's a link in a bunch of them to my web store. It's Redbubble Store. There are shirts and things you can buy there. And that's all I got.
There you go. Brent.
You can find me on the various socials, X/Twitter, Instagram threads, at either Kane Kittens or at Kane.Kittens. You can also usually hear the Intern's Corner Saturday nights on CB Radio, where we talk movies, wrestling history, and some other stuff. And we missed something of wrestling history this week, but we may just throw it in for next week just because of, stuff.
I gave Brent a couple of good examples of wrestling history.
I don't know if they were good, but they are certainly notable examples.
They were. Chad, if you have that Amazon Prime link, it's your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. Also, if you subscribe the regular way from now until the 16th or 19th, something like that, couple weeks. If you subscribe the regular way, you get 3 months free of Apple TV. You can also use credit card Rocket Sock in the Fortnite item shop when you buy Metallica, Pirates of the Caribbean, Deadpool, Wolverine, and all the other collaborations that are to come. Maybe even Five Nights at Freddy's that people want. Anyway, use the code #EpicPartner. This is where Tim sends us home for the night.
Yeah, everybody, thanks for tuning in tonight. I hope you enjoyed SummerSlam last night and enjoy all the programming coming up this week, leading to another edition of WTR Sunday Night Wrestle Talk Radio next Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern, 8 o'clock Mountain. See you then. Amen.